Welcome to Australia's Future with Tony Abbott. I'm Daniel Wilde from the Institute of Public Affairs. Australia is facing its most significant challenges since World War II. Geopolitical tensions are increasing, cultural self-confidence is in decline. The values which define us, freedom, democracy, egalitarianism, and sacrifice, are being put to the test. Over this special podcast series, Tony and I discuss how Australia can survive and flourish in the decades ahead. Well, hello, Tony, and g'day to all of our listeners and viewers. Lovely to be with you again for another episode of Australia's Future with Tony Abbott. As always, we've got some very interesting and important topics to discuss today. We're going to be discussing the issue here in Victoria with Moira Deeming, MP for the Liberal Party, at risk of being kicked out of the Parliamentary Liberal Party by the leader, John Pesutto, for standing up for women's rights. And we're also going to be discussing what this means for the broad church idea of the Liberal Party. And at the end of the discussion, we'll talk about the latest iteration of the Voice to Parliament debate. Tony, let's start with the Moira Deeming situation here in Victoria. In a nutshell, there was an event held a couple of days ago, which was basically a women's rights event, saying that only women should be in women's sport and other such common sense notions as that. There were a small group of neo-Nazis that showed up, totally unrelated. Daniel Andrews pinned it on the Liberals as their sympathisers for the neo-Nazis. And now John Pesutto, the leader of the Liberal Party, is moving to expel Moira Deeming from the Parliamentary Liberal Party here in Victoria. She's fighting it. There's going to be a vote in the next couple of days. It's unclear whether Pesutto will win or Moira Deeming will win. But Tony, to begin with, I'd just like to get your overall assessment of the current situation.
Thanks, Dan. Well, I suppose the first point to make is that it surely is possible for someone to stand up for women's rights and remain a member of the Parliamentary Liberal Party. If all Moira Deeming has done is gone out to make a statement to a protest in favour of women's rights, that she supports women's rights to their own safe spaces. She supports the right of women not to have their special places entered by biological males, particularly men who self-identify as women on a momentary basis. Well, I think that she's got every right to do that, and any idea that she should be removed from the Parliamentary Liberal Party for that strikes me as crackers. But look, there are other points to make too. I saw someone writing a comment piece in one of the papers in the last day or so saying that it was somehow Deeming's fault and it was somehow the Liberal Party's fault that the neo-Nazis had gatecrashed the event and hijacked the protest. Well, if it's somehow the Liberal Party's fault that these total ratbags do the wrong thing, no one can do anything without being demonised on the basis of guilt by association because a bunch of ratbags or even provocateurs come along. So I just think that this is yet another example of just how deranged our public debate has become, that it's somehow problematic for a Liberal Member of Parliament to support women's rights, and it's somehow her fault if the event is invaded by people that she's got absolutely nothing to do with and has condemned.
You were Prime Minister and opposition leader, and of course that involves having to manage many different people with different motives and different characters and personalities and so forth, and you did a great job of keeping the team together for such a long time.
I was much better at keeping them together in opposition, as it happened, than in government, because in government you've got all sorts of people who've got their own offices and their own departments and their own agendas, whereas the sole agenda of an opposition is really to defeat the then government.
Yep.
And the best way to do that, of course, is to create a clear contest. And that's been the difficulty of Liberal oppositions in more recent times, creating a clear contest rather than simply agreeing across a whole range of potentially contentious issues with the governing Labor Party. So look, I was I was very effective in keeping the team together and winning a resounding victory in 2013. But I don't claim to be the authority on all things when it comes to maintaining internal unity.
Well, the Liberal Party here in Victoria has been in opposition for a long time, mm-hmm. so I think they could learn a thing or two. And how would you have dealt with this kind of issue? I mean, to me, it just seems like John Pesutto has given Labor such a big free kick on this. I mean, how would you have dealt with it, do you reckon?
Well, I listened the other night to Peter Credlin's editorial, and she basically pointed out that Pesutto had put himself in a lose-lose situation because even if he succeeds in expelling Maura Deeming from the parliamentary party, she's certainly not going to be expelled from the wider party. And
it's 'cause she's
you could then have a situation where she's excluded from the parliamentary party, but she turns up to wider Liberal events and is greeted rapturously, because I suspect that 90% of the lay membership would strongly support Maura Deeming's position
yep.
on women's rights and would be only too happy to applaud someone who has been made a martyr over something like this. So look, I think the first law of leadership is not to be bluffed by your opponent.
Mm.
And again, Daniel Andrews, over the last 8 years or 9 years, has been very effective at bluffing his opponents inside the Labor Party and beyond. And I just wish that there were people, particularly in the Parliament, particularly on the opposition side of the Parliament, who were prepared to stand up to this bloke, because plainly he's a bully in every sense of the word, and plainly he's pursuing an extremely radical leftist agenda. The fact that he's apparently flown a trans flag, I didn't know there was a trans flag, but apparently there is and he's now flying the trans flag from at least some Victorian government buildings as a way of saying up yours, essentially, to everyone who doesn't accept this whole trans agenda, which is essentially not just a cancellation of rights that women have been fighting for centuries, but almost a cancellation of women.
Mm.
When you think of this trans push to get away from the very term women and mothers. So a mother is someone who chest feeds, and a woman is someone who menstruates. I mean, really, this is, again, crackers. And yet the objective common sense position has so few defenders in our public life right now.
Mm. Do you think Daniel Andrews wants to cancel women?
Look, I think Daniel Andrews, above all else, just wants to preserve his own position as the supremo of state politics. And to that end, he ridicules his opponents. He bullies those who might disagree. He's got large swathes of the media completely bluffed. And it seems that lots of people inside the official opposition are pretty intimidated as well.
I think that's right. There's another facet to this, which is, so Maura Deeming is from the western metropolitan suburbs of Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
She basically took Bernie Finn's place and he was kicked out before the last election. And so now if they kick Maura out, they're only going to have one representative in the western suburbs of metropolitan Melbourne. So this, not only is there a principal problem here, but that's the exact part of the state that they need to win.
And my understanding, Dan, is that it was one of the few parts of the state where there was a swing to the Liberal
That's
Party,
right.
strong swing to the Liberal Party at the recent state election. And given that the, I suppose, the traditional working class is becoming more conservative at the same time as the traditional middle and upper class is becoming less conservative, you'd think that these are precisely the people that the Liberal Party needs to appeal to more, and you're not going to appeal to them more by kicking out their representative, especially kicking out their representative for doing something which, at least until a very few years ago, would have been regarded as screamingly obvious, namely standing up for the right of women to their own spaces and not having to share those spaces with blokes who say they're women. Well, yeah, look, I know yesterday's people have got to be careful about gratuitous advice to today's people, but nevertheless, I just don't see how the Liberal Party is going to flourish, given its need to appeal to conservative voters, if it keeps trying to expel its more conservative parliamentary members. Well, I'm certainly not saying that the guy should go, because I think he's a relatively new leader. You've got to give them a bit of latitude. I think he certainly should be given ample time to grow and develop as a leader. But every leader has got to learn from mistakes. And I certainly think that there has been an overreaction on the part of the Liberal leadership to this particular incident. And while it might be said that Moira Deeming was unwise to be associated with such an out-there organiser of this particular protest, the fundamental principle is sound.
Mm.
Women's rights should be respected, and it is not anti-trans to be pro-women. It is not. We should be respectful towards trans people. We really should. But at the same time, we cannot erode or undermine the rights that women have fought so hard for.
And this, to me, gets to a bigger issue, which is, you know, the idea of the Liberal Party as a broad church, which I think was a term that John Howard came up with to accommodate the various strands, whether it's liberal or conservative or libertarian, to accommodate those different strands of those who were, you know, broadly speaking, on the right of the political spectrum. To me, it's, is the Liberal Party still a broad church? I mean, they are actively seeking to diminish and kick out anyone that could be considered remotely conservative. Is today's Liberal Party seems a lot different to the Liberal Party you led to a massive victory in 2013, much different to the Liberal Party that John Howard led in 96. What's your perspective on the broad church situation?
I certainly agree that any political party that wants to command 50% or thereabouts of the population has got to be, to use Howard's phrase, a broad church, to use, I think, a less satisfactory phrase, which someone else came up with, a big tent. Look, every political movement that seeks to unite has got to be, if you like, a coalition. There's an internal coalition as well as an external coalition.
Mm.
Again, to quote Howard, John used to say that the Liberal Party is the political custodian in this country of the conservative tradition of Edmund Burke and the liberal tradition of J.S. Mill, or the J.S. Mill of On Liberty. My way of putting it was to say that we are the Freedom Party. We support smaller government, lower taxes, greater freedom. We are the Tradition Party. We support the family, small business, and institutions and values that have stood the test of time. But above all else, we are the Patriotic Party. We believe in Australia, and we want to make it stronger by building on its existing strengths. So certainly, as conceived by John Howard and as I tried to make it, the Liberal Party, the Liberal National Coalition, has a demonstrated capacity to win substantial majorities in Parliament.
Mm.
Certainly in some jurisdictions at the moment, not so much the federal one, but under Peter Dutton, but in some jurisdictions at the moment, the Liberal Party does seem to be making too many concessions to the Labor Party.
Mm.
It does seem to be surrendering too many areas of contention to a Labor-Green perspective, and I think that's a real pity. Now, I'm not saying that the Liberal Party should somehow, purge itself of its more progressive, in inverted commas, members.
What?
I just think that there's got to be a place in a Howard Menzies Liberal Party for staunch conservatives, as well as people who regard themselves as very much smaller liberals.
I'd be all up for a bit of purging of the progressives, I've got to say, Tony, because I think that the time has come where they're causing far too much trouble.
Well, I suppose people have got to ask themselves, what do I really believe? What do I really stand for? And what are the policy positions that flow from that?
Mm.
And which particular party best represents those positions? Now, I just think, again, to quote someone who in some respects might subsequently have gone off the rails, Alex Hawke, a member of the Federal Parliamentary Party, but in his days as young Liberal president, he was responsible for the immortal phrase, "You don't join the Liberal Party to be left-wing."
Yes.
Seems some people do these days.
It does. What I wanted to get your thoughts on now, Tony, is what leads on from that discussion is there's an interesting writer in the UK called Matthew Goodwin, and he's one of the leading analysts of the realignment and Brexit and everything that drove that, and this sort of disgruntled 20 or 30% of people in the population that don't have a voice. And he's got a very interesting piece out today on his Substack, which leads into his book. And he's undertaken some polling, and he argues there's basically three unrepresented views in the community, by which he means that the views of the community aren't being represented in politics. The first is the notion that political correctness has gone too far. The second is the notion that immigration should be cut. And the third is that Britain's distinctive identity, culture and history should be promoted more. So what he's saying is that a significant portion of the community believe these three things, but only a minority of those on both sides of politics in Britain believe it. That's exactly the same here in Australia. And I wanted to get your thoughts about this challenge of how do we get the political class to pay attention to the desires of the mainstream.
Let's get to that in a moment, Dan. But before we do, I probably should add, apropos of the previous discussion, whatever disappointments people have in the Liberal Party, and I accept that many people have great disappointments in the Liberal Party, I would still urge them to support the Liberal Party electorally, and I would encourage them, if they normally vote Liberal, to think of joining the party and making it a better party than it is. No political party is perfect, and in the end, every political contest is a choice, not necessarily between great and good, sometimes not even necessarily between good and bad. Sometimes it's between bad and worse. Now, we still have to make the best possible choice we can under the circumstances, and whatever disappointments we might have in Liberal oppositions or Liberal governments that aren't creating the kind of political contest that we would prefer, we still have to accept, I think, that even a progressive Liberal party is better than a Green left Labor government. And whatever good things the current federal Labor government is doing on AUKUS, for instance, and foreign policy and defence more generally, on domestic policy, there's a lot of really bad things going on, which we've spoken about before and we'll no doubt speak about again.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make that crystal clear before we move on. Now, to the extent that you've asked me, based on Matthew Goodwin's thesis, do I think there's too much political correctness? Yes. Do I think there's a case for reining back immigration? Yes. Do I think that there's not enough focus on the fundamental strengths of Anglophone societies? Yes. I think that we do not make minorities feel more welcome by running down the majority. We do not make newcomers feel more welcome by being too critical of the host culture. And I think that here in Australia, from a British foundation, we've created a society which, in terms of its prosperity and its freedom and its fairness, is second to none. And the fact that we do have so many immigrants knocking on our door and sometimes trying to climb in through the window shows just how attractive, for all its current faults and discontents, our society really, really is. The disappointment is that there is now quite a significant section of the population, the more conservative section of the population, that does feel unrepresented. The fact that opinion polls everywhere at the moment, federally and at the state level, show roughly a third voting Labor, roughly a third voting Liberal or National, and a third spraying everywhere, shows that fewer and fewer people feel that the traditional major parties are representing them well. And I think that for conservatives, there is this question, do you stick with the Liberal Party for all its faults, or do you protest by voting for a minor party of the right? Now, I would respectfully say to my discontented fellow conservatives, persevere with the Liberal Party. But if the polls are to be believed, many of them are tempted otherwise, and I hope I can tempt them back, particularly in this week before the New South Wales state election.
Yeah, and one of the issues that'll be front of mind for a lot of these discontented Liberal voters or conservatives is the voice to Parliament. There's lots of concerns about what the coalition may or may not do on it. The Nats have opposed it, and good on them for doing that. That's the right thing to do. Will the Liberal Party oppose it? And that's a big concern of the community. Just on the specific issue that's in front of us at the moment, which is to do with the so-called machinery legislation. Now, this is not to do with the actual vote itself, but it's setting up the vote. But basically, there's a key part here, which is to do with funding. And Anthony Albanese has said that neither side, the yes or the no case, will get equal funding. Neither the yes or no case will get any funding from government. Now, that's a white lie, because the government is giving DGR status to the yes and not the no case. And plus, the government has given millions of dollars to various yes causes over the years. Isn't it important that the government just is honest about this and says, look, you're both getting equal, so we can have a fair debate? Surely that would be the right thing and the honourable thing to do.
Quite correct, Dan. To start off with, this voice is not about recognition, which almost everyone supports. This voice is about power. It's a power grab. It's an institution which, as currently proposed, will elevate one group of Australians above another group, or above every other group, or above the rest of us generally, and it will make the already gummed up and complex processes of government in our country even more complicated and difficult. Yep. As the Prime Minister himself all but conceded, it will have an effective veto on government decisions, not just about Indigenous people specifically, but about almost everything. Yep. Because everything relates to Indigenous people one way or another. As the Prime Minister himself said, only a brave government would go against the voice. So this is an extraordinary change that we are being asked to make on the basis of very little real scrutiny. There have been no constitutional conventions about this. The government has refused to provide details. It's not fostering a debate. It's the biggest constitutional change that we've ever been asked to make, because it's not just about altering what the government can do, what the Commonwealth can do. It's about very significantly and substantially changing how we are governed. It's about trying to re-inject an element of Indigenous sovereignty into our system 200 odd years after that passed. So it's a huge act of constitutional re-engineering, which we are being asked to accept on the vibe. And yes, there is a fundamental unfairness about it, as you say, Dan. They're not funding equally both sides. They're giving funding to neither side or to none of the various entities involved in the debate, except that they are giving tax deductibility to donations to one side, and there are many millions of government money being made available, so we're told, to counter misinformation. Now, it's hard to see how this won't just be propaganda for one side of the argument.
Yeah, that's right. Look, one thing that's interesting, and I think we can round out the conversation here, is how the vote will actually work, because voting in Australia is compulsory, including in relation to a referendum. But we know that the turnout has been declining. It was about 88% year on year declining at federal elections. There's a good strand of thinking that the turnout to this referendum could be something like 80%, which means effectively that the vote could be decided by those who don't rock up, or could be heavily influenced in that way. You're campaigning and you're out there in favour of no. What would be your message to those people who are listening to this at home about what, if you're concerned about the voice and if you are inclined to vote no, what do these people need to do to make sure that that is the outcome that they want to attain?
Well, the fundamental thing is do turn up and vote. I hope people will be prepared to speak out about this within their families, within their communities, and more broadly, if they feel they have the courage and the ability to do so. But I also think that if you do care for your country and you are worried about where it's going, particularly if this voice were to get up, I think that you should think about supporting financially some of the entities which are out there quite properly raising objections to this voice. Now, the IPA is obviously one of those organisations. Advance Australia is one of those organisations. The group associated with Gary Johns and Warren Mundine is another one of those entities. I just think it's important that people stand up and be counted on this, stand up for Australia on this. And I reckon that Australians who believe in constitutional equality must vote no to this activist's voice.
Tony, that's a great place to end. So thank you again for your insights and perspective. I think the video format's going great. The views are going up very rapidly. So we appreciate your time and your insights and analysis, and we'll keep chatting.
Thanks, Dan.
This is a production of the Centre for the Australian Way of Life at the Institute of Public Affairs. To find out more, visit australia.ipa.org.au.